you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome into the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. I'm Mark Schanowski. I'll be joined by Kendall Gill a little bit later in the show. But we're going to start out with a special guest. We're joined by Darnell Mayberry. He's the Bulls beat reporter for The Athletic. He's done some great work beginning his second year on the beat. Darnell, it's already been kind of an interesting start to training camp. First, you get the injuries to Denzel Valentine and Lauri Markkanen. And now the latest thing is Jabari Parker apparently not too happy about being told he's going to run with the second unit for a while. What's your take on the whole Jabari Parker situation right now?
I mean, it's strange, but it was also predictable. It's strange from the sense that it, you know, I mean, I think Fred Hoiberg said today they're 10 days in. So, I mean, we haven't even made it 2 weeks for a potential problem to rear its head. And, you know, I think anyone who could put the pieces together when they made the signing, knowing that the pieces didn't fit, could have predicted that the Bulls would have a potential problem on their hands. And here we are, you know, before the regular season even starts, and we've got an unhappy camper and Jabari who was moved to the bench and is clearly unhappy with it.
It's interesting you brought up the fit of the initial signing. I remember being at the news conference and John Paxson saying how that, you know, he fit the arc of the team, being a young player whose best basketball is ahead of him. But he also seemed to be a duplication of the skill set that Zach LaVine brings, you know, kind of a volume scorer, a guy that, you know, is not a great defensive player. It seems like they're trying to fit, you know, a square peg into a round hole, and that process is going to put a lot of extra pressure on Fred Hoiberg. How's the coaching staff going to try to deal with the fact that they have some duplication of talent at certain spots and there's really not enough minutes or shot attempts to keep everybody happy?
Yeah, it's an unenviable position that Fred Hoiberg and his staff are in. I mean, you can understand on from his perspective why he wants to move Jabari to the bench. I mean, they played really poorly in those first three games and they did not look well. I guess the Pelicans game, they were okay, but defensively they didn't look good even in that game. So, you know, you can understand why he wants to try to find a better fit and is doing what's best for the team, frankly. And I can't fault him for that. But at the same time, he does have a $20 million a year player on his hands, their prize free agent acquisition, who he has to sort of cater to some degree or else risk losing him and have him become a potential problem in the locker room. So, you know, I think his message early on in this decision is going to be, look, we're going to do what's best for the team. I want to give you more freedom, talking to Jabari. I want to give you more freedom to run the second team and have the ball in your hands as a facilitator and playmaker. And hopefully that gets him going. And, you know, it's just a matter of whether or not Jabari wants to buy in and accept that role. Because right now they're trying to basically tread water while Lauri Markkanen is out. And for as long as he's out, that could be, you know, through mid-November, Jabari might have to come off the bench.
Clearly he was told when he signed back in July that he would be the starting small forward. He came to training camp anticipating that would be the case, but circumstances beyond anybody's control. As you mentioned, Lauri Markkanen goes down with the injury and they have to move Jabari to the four spot. You know, I think he came in trying to feel like he was going to rehabilitate his career. He's going to get numbers that were closer to what he had before the second ACL injury when he was averaging close to 20 points with the Bucks. And now he's in a situation where he's going to be on limited minutes. He had his best game, arguably, in a Bulls uniform against the Pacers Wednesday night, but he didn't want to talk to reporters about playing with the second team afterwards. He did meet with reporters Thursday before practice, but, you know, when he was asked if he's willing to accept any role on this team, given all the adversity he's encountered in his career, his comment was, no comment. Does that suggest this is going to be a lingering issue, especially with Hoiberg indicating he liked the way Parker looked with the second group?
Yeah, and then not only did he indicate it, I mean, he flat out said it four times during his meeting with the media today. Fred Hoiberg said he liked what he saw, not just from the first string, but also the second string. So Bobby Portis has played extremely well throughout this preseason. And, you know, he's making shots, he's rebounding, and he's giving them great energy like he's always done. So he's earned an opportunity to show what he's got in the starting lineup. But at the same time, you can also see why they would like to keep him coming off the bench to be able to provide that energy boost in the second string. But Jabari Parker hadn't played well this preseason. And when you've got Chris Dunn, who Fred Hoiberg also mentioned before practice Thursday as being a really solid performer as a facilitator and playmaker running the team with that first string. It made the decision sort of easy to bring Jabari off the bench and try to get some more defenders in there and Wendell Carter Jr. and, some more energy with Bobby Portis and try to let Jabari have that second string role. But it's going to be a hard sell. That's the bottom line in this whole saga. It's going to be a hard sell for Jabari. He came out, as you mentioned, said no comment when asked if he's willing to do anything except any role that best fits the team. So how they do that is going to be really interesting to watch going forward because, here we are still about a week or so away from the regular season opener, and they've already got a potential problem on their hands.
As I mentioned, this is your second year covering the Bulls beat for The Athletic, and of course you came in last year and had to chronicle the whole fight on the eve of the season opener between Bobby Portis and Niko Mirotić that had Bobby suspended for the first eight games. And I think a lot of people in the media and the fan base thought it was probably only a matter of time until Bobby was moved along. It turned out that Mirotić was the guy who got traded. But it's been interesting to watch Bobby's evolution as kind of a leader in this group. You know, he doesn't say a lot in terms of speaking to the media, but it seems like he really has the respect of the room with the passion and how hard that he plays. Is he going to be really a focal point to this group and whatever success they may have in year two of the rebuild?
I think he could be. He's one of the more consistent performers that they have. There's some concerns, obviously, about him as a defender, but offensively, he gives you everything he has and, knocking down shots and being able to rebound the way he does defensively. It's really helped the team. So, I think he could be a big component this year to this year's team. And I'd like to see if he's going to get this starting lineup opportunity because he has to earn those minutes, and he has, but at the same time, he's excelled in that six-man role. I've talked to Bobby in the past, and he said he'd prefer to come off the bench with this team because you've got so many scorers in the starting lineup. He can go in the second string and really get his shot whenever he wants. So if he can do that, this team's going to be much better coming off the bench in the second string. But, if he's starting now, then I think you've got a whole new dynamic that he's going to have to adjust to.
The other thing going on with Bobby Portis right now is that his representatives are negotiating with Bulls management trying to get an extension of his rookie deal done by the deadline, which I believe is the season opener. So that's coming up rapidly. What's your gut feeling about whether the two sides will be able to find a salary figure that they can both live with?
And I've talked to some people in the days leading up to, I believe Monday is the deadline, I'm hearing that it's probably not going to get done, and they're going to have to continue to see how the season plays out and then just kind of continue negotiating next summer. Maybe go the Zach LaVine route that they did this past summer and match an offer that he might receive from another team as a restricted free agent. But from what I'm hearing right now, it's probably not going to get done before the deadline.
And the danger in that, of course, is you have a player who might be a little bit unhappy, and some selfishness can sometimes creep in with guys heading into free agency. They want to make sure they get their numbers to the point where they have the best case to make a foray into free agency. Bobby has shown through his first three plus years in the league that he's willing to do what the team wants, indicated by his talk about accepting the sixth man role back on media day. But if it's a near a close gap between what he wants and what the Bulls are prepared to offer, you think there's any chance they might be able to find a way to bridge that? Because I don't think Fred Hoiberg wants one more distraction about having to worry about whether he's going to have a player who's worried about his contract status.
Yeah, I don't see that there's any way that they can do it before the season starts, unless there's some sort of 11th hour deal in negotiation. But, my thing is Bobby has played really well so far this preseason and doesn't look like it's bothered him so far. So I've been really impressed with how Bobby has looked and not letting the negotiations or the contract matters affect his play in any way.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the starting lineup shakes out on opening night if indeed Bobby Portis is your starter at power forward. We're visiting with Darnell Mayberry. He's the Bulls beat reporter for The Athletic. You can follow his great work there. Let's talk about Zach LaVine. You know, I was amazed at some of the fan reaction on social media after the Bulls matched the four-year, $78 million offer sheet he signed with the Sacramento Kings. You know, there were some strong takes that why would you match that kind of offer for a player coming off an ACL injury who doesn't always show the passion on the defensive end. And it almost seemed like Zach was going to have to win over a large segment of the fan base. Early in the preseason, he's doing all the right things. He's moving well on the court. He's scoring with ease. And he seems to be showing more focus and attention to detail on the defensive end. What's your take on what you've seen from Zach so far in preseason?
You know, I always thought that the criticism that he received all of last season really was overblown. And coming into this year, you know, people were so down on him and criticized him so much for the contract. You know, I just didn't understand why more people didn't take a wait-and-see approach to Zach LaVine's contract and his performance, you know, what he's able to bring this team. He was coming off the ACL injury last year, and, you know, obviously he clearly was not himself. But now that he's fully healthy and more comfortable and confident in his body, you're kind of seeing the explosive scorer that he can be. So I just never understood that criticism, and I'm glad that, you know, for Zach that he's playing well. And I think that's obviously going to help the Bulls as well once he starts to get more and more comfortable.
Yeah, I saw where he mentioned that he feels like he's back to the player he was before the ACL injury when he was averaging about 19 points a game with the Timberwolves, shooting almost 39% from the three-point line. I don't know about you, Darnell, but I think he's going to average 20 points fairly easily with this team, especially early on with Lowry out of the lineup.
Yeah, and as you know, Mark, I think it's the way and the manner in which he gets those 20 points. You know, if he comes out and he's taking, you know, 17, 18 shots a game to get those 20 points and cutting off the ball movement, the spacing, the flow and the pace of the offense, then that's a problem. But if he's going out there and playing with his teammates and excelling in a equal opportunity offense where the ball's moving and you've got everyone getting an opportunity, then I think that's the player that he needs to be this year, and that's the player that they want him to be. It's just a question of if he's going to be able to keep up the level of efficiency that we've seen throughout this preseason, and that's my biggest question on Zach is whether or not he's going to, you know, revert to old bad habits or, you know, show a new level of play where he's, you know, sharing the ball more and not cutting off possessions, making the ball stick with isolations.
You know, in the early win total projections came out from the Las Vegas bookmakers. The first one I saw was 27.5 from Westgate. Then I saw 28.5 from another site. I thought for sure, you know, if I was a gambler, I'd say pound the over. The Bulls are clearly going to win at least 30 games. Then you have the injury with Lowry, Jabari getting off to a slow start. I'm not asking you to predict a win total, but what's your take in general about how much improvement we should see from the Bulls this season?
You know, I thought we were going to see a much better team, much improved team when we came into camp and everyone was healthy. But then you got the Denzel Valentine news, and then a day or so later you get the Lowry marketing news. And I think that's really going to hurt. And all the things that we've been talking about, you know, Jabari comes in and he's playing sort of out of position at the three. And, you know, now they're going to try to move him back to the four. Well, that's just going to basically stunt the growth of this team and the chemistry and the development of this team. Once Lowry Marketing comes back, he's going to have to go back to playing the three out of position and have to learn that all over again, if indeed this is the direction that the coaching staff chooses to go. You know, I just think that it's going to be really, really hard for these guys with the injuries and the shuffling of the lineup to really develop that chemistry and consistency that it takes to show a lot of improvement. What I do think we'll see is a lot of individual improvement. I mean, we're seeing, you know, a guy who we're not even talking about, no one, not just in this conversation, but no one seems to be talking about is Chris Dunn.
Right.
You know, he looks like he's really matured from last year to this year. He's coming out. He hasn't taken more than seven shots in any preseason game. And I talked to him a little bit about that last night after the Pacers game. And, you know, he says that he knows where he's going to get his shots. He feels comfortable with that and his role in this offense. He wants to get everyone else involved. He considers himself a pass-first point guard, and I think you're seeing the improvement out of him individually. You're seeing that with Zach. You're seeing that with Wendell. You know, you're obviously seeing that with Bobby, who's playing incredibly well. So I think you're going to see individual improvement. It's just a matter of whether or not these guys can all come together and have success as a team. And I think that's the biggest thing that everyone wants to see, but it could take a lot of time this year with all the things that are going up.
Before we let you go, before you came to Chicago, you covered the Oklahoma City Thunder for a number of years, and I know a lot of basketball fans are curious about the whole dynamic between Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. Were you there as well when James Harden was part of the group?
I was.
You know, what was that whole dynamic like? I'm sure people are curious.
It was. I mean, those guys were so young. It was new. It was fresh. And they just had a lot of fun competing with each other and going out there and basically exceeding the timeline, you know, having an accelerated timeline and getting there faster than anyone thought. I mean, it was amazing how much talent was there. And, you know, I'll tell you how much different it was in those days, Mark. I was on the James Harden bandwagon. I think I was the driver of that bandwagon. I was saying he should have been a starter all along, and people thought I was crazy. How could you start this guy? I was like, he needs to be a starter. You know, and then you obviously hear, you know, it's not who starts, it's who finishes, and he did finish a lot of games. But, you know, I felt like all along he had the potential to be, you know, a 35-minute per game player. But at that time, people didn't really look at him like that, and people thought I was crazy for that. And now look at him. You know, he's the reigning MVP. So that just shows you how much different things were in those days.
Obviously, Russell Westbrook has been the talk of basketball. Two straight seasons averaging a triple-double, which was unheard of since the days of Oscar Robertson. You know, people see his persona on the court, the whole angry Russ vibe. What's he like off the court? Is he a regular guy off the court, or does he carry that angry Russ persona everywhere?
Well, I'll start by saying he keeps you at arm's length off the court. You know, that's just kind of his way about him, and you know there's nothing wrong with that. He likes his privacy, but you know, from everything that you hear from the people who are within on that team, within that organization, they swear by him. And you know, I know some people on the fringes, you know, of that organization who have really received a lot of hospitality from Russ. They've gotten a lot of you know, just sort of just old-fashioned good treatment from Russ, and they like him. I mean, they really love him as a person and a player. But you know, he's a family guy. I mean, he's got a son. His wife, he and his wife are expecting twins. I think twin girls sometime early next year. So you know, that's what he's all about. You know, he's not one of those guys who you're going to see with a big entourage. You know, his entourage is his mom and dad, his little brother, and now his wife and kids. You know, that's his entourage. You might see him with his agent. But, you know, I give him this much. You've never heard anything about Russ off the court. You know, he's as much as of a prickly guy as he can be on the court and to the media, you know, he doesn't portray that off the court in any way. You don't hear about him getting in trouble with the law or having any running afoul of anything. So, I will give him credit for that. You know, it's totally different than what you see on the court.
And lastly, can't let you go without asking about Kevin Durant. You're in a unique perspective to kind of chronicle the evolution of a guy's personality. When early in his career, I think he was one of the most beloved players worldwide. I mean, I remember his news conference when he won the MVP. He was there with his mom, and he, you know, he said all the right things, and he always seemed to strike the right tone in terms of his public life. And then, of course, he jumped to Golden State and was vilified by a lot of press around the country. And then he kind of took a little bit of that angry persona on where, you know, he didn't care what people are going to write or say. But obviously it has bothered him and continues to bother him. What's your whole take on the evolution of Kevin Durant?
You know, it's a tricky one because, you know, on one hand, you know, people are allowed to evolve and mature and grow in whatever way they feel is best for them. But it, you know, on the other, you did see him come into the league as a, you know, completely different, I shouldn't even say completely different person, Mark, but, you know, he was sort of this humble, down-to-earth superstar that, you know, was kind of the boy next door. And obviously now he's changed with, you know, a lot of the things that he's saying and doing. And, you know, I will say the unfortunate part is that, you know, somewhere along the lines, he lost that, you know, that humble, genuine nature to him, where he was just, you know, soft-spoken and, you know, tried his best to do all the right things. And maybe that took a toll on him. I don't know. But it's definitely changed, and I don't want to say he's not the same guy, because at the end of the day, I think Kevin Durant is a phenomenal person. You can say whatever you want about the decision he made, or you know, some of the other comments that he's made since the decision, and the things that he's done, some of the things that he's done. But I do think he's a genuinely good person, and I've experienced that, you know, in my career dealing with him for so many years, and I'll never take that away from him. But it's a complete 180 from when he was in OKC, you know, covering up his tattoos because he didn't want to give the wrong impression, and things like that. So, you know, but what a player, though. I mean, he is exactly who everyone thought he was going to be when he came out of Texas, and then some. So, you know, you got to tip your cap to the player that he's made himself to be.
Yeah, one of the greatest pure scorers the game has ever seen. Last thing I'll ask you, do you think there's a third act in his career? You think he's going to go to another team to try to prove how great he is somewhere down the road?
I do. And, you know, everyone that I'm talking to basically says that they don't think that he's long for Golden State. And, you know, once he made that decision to leave Oklahoma City, you know, that kind of opened the door for him to go anywhere he wants, whenever he wants. And I think that's going to be probably his next chapter, to use his own phrase. I don't know where that's going to be. I don't even think he might know where that is at this point. But, you know, you are hearing a lot of rumblings out in Oakland where they're just not clicking like they used to. And I think that's probably going to take a toll on them, on him individually and them as a team. So I wouldn't be surprised to see this being his last year in a Warriors uniform.
Well, that'll be one of the stories to watch, NBA Summer of 2019. Darnell Mayberry, our guest, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be following your coverage at The Athletic, the subscription sports site, well worth investing in. They've got great expanded coverage on the Bulls and all your favorite teams, so you definitely want to check that out. Darnell, thanks for joining us. We look forward to seeing you at the games throughout the season.
Thanks so much for having me, Mark. I appreciate it.
Coming up next, we talked about the change in Kevin Durant. Well, that's nothing compared to what we saw with Jimmy Butler. Our friend Kendall Gill has a lot to say about that. That's next on the Bulls Talk podcast.
Can't get enough of your Bulls? Tune in every single game day to Bulls pregame and flip back after the action for postgame live all season long. All 82 games, only on NBC Sports Chicago.
We've got a special treat for you next on the Bulls Talk podcast, presented by Coors Light. I'm joined by my studio partner, Kendall Gill, and Vincent Goodwill in his final appearance at NBC Sports Chicago, kind enough to join us. Vinny, you're excited for the new challenge coming up at Yahoo?
Yeah, since you guys fired me. No. It's going to be exciting to cover the league nationally. It's been a dream of mine. But this has been really fun, you know, with you guys doing TV. The sparring with Kendall, listening to Will produce soliloquies, watching Mark Shadowski keep his sanity little by little as he
losing
it. It's been fun, man. It's been great.
Yeah, Kendall, it's going to be a little bit different.
It is, because
Vinny is the ultimate contrarian.
He is.
You can say the sky is blue. He's going to say it's a different color. I mean, whatever you're talking about, he's going to go the other way.
Even if it's daylight, he's going to say it's a different color. Even though we know it's blue, he's always going to go the opposite way.
I could be a contrarian, but I'm usually right.
See, that's the other thing. No, he'll never admit when he's wrong.
I can admit when I'm wrong.
But you were wrong a lot of the time.
Okay. Remember this, and this is when you first told me I was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
The Bulls had beat, remember TNT Bulls? Remember how long ago that was?
Yeah.
They beat the Celtics on like a Thursday night at home,
uh-huh.
and they went to like 26-16. Uh-huh. They were third in the East. Uh-huh. That night, I went on a post game and I said, "This team will not make the playoffs." You are out of your mind. So what happened? Did they make the playoffs?
Hey, a broken clock is right twice a day.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I was right.
you were right. I can admit you were right, but who at that time would have thought they'd have missed the playoffs?
Someone who knows better.
Oh, please. You know why? Because your boy, I remember that, your boy scored 5 points against the Memphis Grizzlies.
Jimmy Butler
scored 5 points against the Memphis Grizzlies when they needed that game. I remember it. So it's sort of your fault.
Yeah, it's my fault that Jimmy scored 5 points in that game? Okay.
Yeah, because I know you're Jimmy's alter ego. You sit on his little left shoulder like this, talking in his ear.
So am I the good angel or am I Lucifer? Which one am I?
I haven't been able to distinguish that yet.
Okay, just let me know whichever role I'm going to be. Which one were you for Derek?
I'm the good angel, man. I'm the reason why Derek's still in the league.
Oh, is that
because,
right?
Because I'm sitting on his left shoulder talking about, you can do it.
Okay.
Wow. That went to a whole different level. I didn't really expect it to
we
go there,
miss
but that's
Vincent
where we're
Goodwill.
At.
We're going to miss him.
Oh, my God.
So have you talked to Jimmy since this has all gone down?
I'm not at liberty to say such
Mark,
things.
Come on now. This is the last thing you're doing for the station. Give us something good.
We were just sitting in the green room. He was texting Jimmy. I saw him and everything.
I was not texting Jimmy in the green room. we've talked a little bit, but I try to, you know, while I'm still in this position, you know, I've just tried to just check in, you know, ask a couple questions here and there. But if Jimmy's a jerk to everybody else, what makes people think he's not going to be a jerk to me?
Well, you worked years cultivating that relationship. So you
yeah, but he's still a jerk. He can still be a jerk. We can still be good.
Oh, so was that a Freudian slip? The real answer just came out right there.
But I've always said that, Jimmy. I've always said that about Jimmy.
No, you didn't.
Absolutely.
You know, when you wait to the last show to tell the truth, Vincent Goodwill.
I told the truth. Jimmy is hard to play with. Is Jimmy hard to play with? I believe that he is if you do not live up to his standards. And by living up to his standards, I mean –
But see, Jimmy keeps raising the bar. You know, it's a testimony to his work ethic that he became, you know, a multiple-time All-Star. But it seems like every year he talks more and more about, nobody works as hard as me. Yeah. I'm the guy to bring something new to my game every year. Nobody wants to win as much as I do. It's taken on almost a life of its own.
I think what happens is Jimmy walked into a situation where compared to in Chicago, where he had to prove to people that he was an All-Star caliber player, he walked into Minnesota with that pedigree, but they had two players there who he admits are talented and gifted. And he's like, if you guys put the type of work in that I put in this treacherous Western Conference, we can really make some noise. But if you're not putting it in, if you're only in it for your numbers, like young guys sometimes usually are, then you're not going to feel like they don't have the urgency that Jimmy Butler has right now.
Yeah, but you know the famous Deion Sanders line, are you mad about the money? Is that what he's mad about, that he didn't get paid when Karl Anthony Towns and Wiggins got maxed out?
Well, I think Wiggins got maxed out basically right before Jimmy got there, so you can't really complain about something like that. But I do think that for Jimmy to look at it from a principled matter and say, I'm the guy that's risking my behind, you know, getting injured and stuff like that, playing hard for the team, and these two young guys who don't take the game as seriously are the ones getting paid. These are my thoughts, not his, just deducting from it. I think he would probably have a problem with that. So if you look at some of the teams that's been rumored that he would go to, that he's talking about, they have either the cap space or they're on a coast or, you know what I'm saying, or they're close to – they can be close to contention.
They're bad teams, though, and he says he wants to win.
Yeah, but here's the thing. If they're a bad team with cap space – you can believe that you can bring a free agent along with you. You play USA basketball. Him and Kyrie Irving are tight. He wanted Kyrie Irving to play here with him the day before he got traded. Like, he wanted the Bulls to do everything they could.
You think guys are going to want to team up with Jimmy?
Nobody wants to team up with him. Yeah. You know, and I don't think that he wants to team up with anybody that he thinks is on his level. I mean, that's what his behavior is telling me. You know, he said. He did the interview with Rachel Nichols, right?
Yes.
Rachel Nichols. He said, and I watched the interview. He said, tell the truth. Tell the truth. That's all I want. I just want to be honest. Well, Jimmy, tell the truth. It's about the money, right? Just say, I don't like that Karl Anthony Towns got paid. I don't like that Wiggins got paid when I think that I should get paid.
Instead of going through
this whole fiasco, that's what he should have said.
But see, I don't think it's that simple with saying those guys getting paid, because I don't think he's ever looks at it and says, I don't want this guy to get his money. I just think he wants that atmosphere to be more, I guess, accountable.
No, I'm not saying that he's saying that I don't want these guys to get his money. He's saying that I should be paid the same amount as these guys.
But he couldn't under the CBA, the way it was set up.
Exactly.
And I want you to clear something up for you. I read a report that the Timberwolves did not offer him a max extension.
They offered
now,
him the max.
By waiting, he'll get more next summer.
Right.
So I always thought that was the contention. Did Minnesota, this past summer, when they talked about an extension, did they offer him every dollar that they were allowed to?
Every dollar that they could without, I guess, like 4 and 110 or something like that. But I guess in theory, they could have offered him a 5 and longer deal, basically. So basically, in theory, they feel like they were trying to get him on the cheap. Mm-hmm. And he felt like, look, I'm not the guy that you should be trying to get on the cheap.
Now, that's understandable. Mm-hmm. That's understandable. But I think that he should have gone about it a different way.
I think he did. Kendall, I think that he told Minnesota days after the season ended, mm-hmm. quietly, get me out. If you're not going to pay me, if this isn't, the change is not going to happen, get me out of here. And I think because it happened right before training camp and got public, I think sometimes, you know this from being a player before, mm-hmm. sometimes going to the media is your last resort.
I'm trying
to stay quiet. I'm trying to stay the good soldier so this can happen quietly. A lot of trades that have happened, you know, like Deron Williams when he got traded from Utah, nobody saw that coming because everybody was focused on Carmelo Anthony getting traded from Denver to New York.
We actually saw it because we were out there that night.
That's right.
You know, so, yeah. I think he was trying to do it quietly, and I don't think Minnesota actually took him seriously, and that's mm-hmm. the problem with when your coach is your GM and there's nobody else there. And I think, okay, you know what? Now, since we're going to training camp, all right, I got to push all my cards to the table. And that didn't work. So then it's like, I got to push more cards to the table.
But Mark, don't you think he hurts his value by doing that? Because if I'm a GM, the fact
that he's going to be a free agent at the end of the year, Minnesota's only going to be able to get so much in a trade. They're not going to get a big package of players because teams know he can walk.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think that his reputation is pretty well known around the league, that he's a guy that's an incredible hard worker, a very talented player, but he's a tough guy to get along with.
Yeah, he's a tough guy to get along with, and you don't want going back to Kyrie Irving playing with him. I'm not sure after this whole scenario that guys, like you say, he could go to Brooklyn and attract players. I'm not dealing with that headache. If I'm a free agent, I'm not going there and deal with Jimmy Butler.
So you think ultimately, even with this choreographed thing where he was going to go in there and cuss people out of practice and win with the third stringers and everything else and then do the interview nationally with Rachel Nichols, is it going to work or is he going to open the season in a Timberwolves uniform playing for Tom Thibodeau?
Well, I think because of the terms of the CBA, he has to show up
to
collect his paycheck to get his years accrued and everything else. I just think that's a fact of life. And I think when you go in and you do that in practice, he called it, you know, there was allegedly a team meeting, a players-only meeting today mm-hmm. where he talked about, hey, I don't have a problem with you guys. I have a problem with management, blah, blah, blah. Who knows if that falls on deaf ears or whatever. So I think he's mentally preparing himself. Okay, at least if I had to start the season with him, I'll start the season with him. But I would like to think, just for the sake of, don't get me wrong, I like the drama of this. This is kind of funny to me, like if I'm entertaining. It's really harmless if you think about it.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of nonsense, but it's really harmless. But I would like to think that the Timberwolves would like to move on. Like Glenn Taylor, you would think that he wouldn't want this circus.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You don't want this hanging over your mm-hmm. franchise, you know, your best player, or arguably your best player, starting out the season getting booed on his own home floor. Not that Jimmy cares about that, but just the optics of it don't look good for the franchise. Mm-hmm. So you think the team would make a deal and just get rid of this and move forward?
I would make the deal so you could start fresh, because I don't think that you could have good chemistry, especially the way that practice went yesterday, especially after the Rachel Nichols interview. You just can't do that. And you know what? If I'm a player, if I'm Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins, I'm like, Jimmy, you coming in here, you're talking all this, you haven't won a damn thing.
But they aren't cut like that. They aren't cut like that.
Okay.
Wiggins and Towns are not those type of guys.
All right, okay. Well, I'm different. But you haven't won a damn thing. You haven't been able to get – you were the face of the franchise for the Chicago Bulls.
For 1 year.
For 3 years. Because de facto, when Jimmy was here with Derek, the question was, is this Jimmy's team or Derek's team? So he kind of was the face of the franchise or co-face of the franchise. And you couldn't get this franchise out of the first round
of the playoffs three years in a row.
Then you go to Minnesota and you can't get them out of the first
round. Okay, well.
So you can't talk to me like that, Vincent.
Okay, well, here's what I was. Kendall Gill is just laying it all out today.
This is the last one.
It's the last one.
He just aired it out.
So,
but here's the thing. We talked about it. Before Jimmy got hurt, mm-hmm. they were the third best team in the West. Before he got hurt, Then when it's you leave Towns and Wiggins, you leave the kids to figure it out. They're under 500 team. Jimmy has to come back early from the injury and save them to get them into the playoffs. And, of course, they're going to get waxed by Houston. That was a bad matchup for them. Mm-hmm. When you're in Chicago and your second-best player is a broken-down, mentally disengaged Derrick Rose, I don't know how far any team is going to go. So while even if I may agree with you that Jimmy Butler is not the Kawhi Leonard or – maybe not the Kawhi Leonard, that's a bad example. Maybe not the Kevin Durant,
right.
The LeBron James, the upper of the top crust type of player – I think he's in the category of a Kawhi Leonard, of a Paul George. And those guys are a lot of times guys dictating things.
Okay. You know, Mark, in my second year, I felt I should have made the All-Star team. My third year, I felt I should have made the All-Star team. My seventh year, I felt I should have made
the All-Star team. You know, I felt like I should have dated Kelly Rowland at one point in my life. Okay. Where are we going with this?
Listen to my point. Listen to my point. Okay. I had All-Star caliber years, had the numbers to make the All-Star team. I didn't. So, at the end of the day, history accepts no excuses. Damn it, Jimmy Butler can't get a team out of the first round of playoffs. Okay?
Well, aren't you the
all wait, the excuses you just
wait,
gave me?
Wait, Kendall's just
all the excuses you just gave
Mark
me.
Mark Schanowski?
He has not been able to get him
judge
out.
Judge Schanowski, I need you to judge. I need you to judge.
Because at the end of the day, history is not going to accept any excuses
judge
from me.
Judge Schanowski, I need your impartiality here. Is Kendall Gill not the player, not the analyst who has said numerous times, Rajon Rondo, if he does not get hurt, they beat the Celtics in that 1-8. Are you not the person who has said that?
I did say that.
Okay, 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 okay. So, if he says history accepts no excuses, why present that caveat? Why present that caveat there? Because then Jimmy Butler would have got a team out of the first round of the playoffs.
Okay, listen. If he was that dude,
he should have got one game. I agree.
He should have got one game. With Rondo being out, he says, hey, I'm the hardest working guy on this franchise. I'm a top 15. I'm a top 10, top 15 player. Okay, Jimmy, then get us out of the first round.
Okay.
If you that guy. If you're a max guy, get us out.
So explain to me, and by no means am I making this comparison, but explain to me by using, I'm just using his logic, okay? I'm not comparing. I'm using his logic. Follow me on this. From 1985 to 1987, how many playoff games did Michael Jordan win?
I don't know. Shoot, I can't go back that far.
Mark Schanowski, they lost in the first round to the Milwaukee Bucks. They were swept. In 86, he got 63, but they lost. In 87, they got swept again by the Celtics. That didn't make Michael Jordan any less of a great player. So to me,
you're putting Jimmy Butler
in the
category
of Michael
Jordan.
I'm making no comparison. I'm saying that your criteria is incomplete and slightly unfair to judge one player off of that. If you have a good enough team around you, you should be able to lift your team past a certain threshold. But if you don't have a good team around you, I'm not going to judge you for your team not getting out the first round.
Yeah, LeBron James is 3-6 in the finals. It's not his fault, though.
That's what I'm saying. So you can't. I don't think you can judge all the time by
the end
result.
I'm not saying Jimmy's not a great player. I think he's a great player. But if you're going to walk the walk, but if you're going to talk the talk, you better be able to walk the walk. Has he been able to do that as far as winning?
The results of first round knockout in Minnesota, against that Houston team, first round knockout against the Celtics, you were up 2-0, but you were beaten decisively in the last four games. I think it showed that you just weren't the better team. To me, it comes down to in a seven-game series, if two teams are evenly matched, that's when I put it on the best player, because you have to be the difference between winning and losing. But if you're winning, if you're losing by 10-plus points every game, there's nothing that a great player can do because your team doesn't match up. You know what I'm saying?
I can see your point, but
he can see my point.
I can see.
Mark Judge Schanowski, let me know.
You know what? You talk about not making excuses. He's always insisted that the reason he didn't make the All-Star team is because the coaches gave a career achievement award to Joe Dumars.
They did.
You're going to. What year was that?
97. Joe Dumars was
averaging
11 points a game.
He's averaging 14 points a game. And Doug Collins was the coach.
He was averaging 11 points a game.
Doug Collins was the coach of the All-Star team, so he got to select it. So he's going to take his guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, there's always extenuating circumstances.
Always. History accepts.
History accepts no excuses.
So why didn't you date Halle Berry? History
accepts. Because I was scared. I chickened out. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. Bulls Nation, I chickened out.
That's the plain, unvarnished truth there.
I got scared.
Kendall had a chance.
I had a chance. But you know what? I'm kind of glad I missed the chance. Considering all the ex-husbands she had.
Well, I think that's probably the note to bring Vincent Goodwill's run as our Bulls insider to a close. Yeah. Vinny, we're going to miss you. Follow him at Yahoo. He's going to be doing articles. He's going to be doing video and audio, and we'll be following your stuff out there. And I'm sure there's going to be stories around the Midwest, maybe even Chicago, in years to come, that we get to come and see you do your work.
If you ever see me in the United Center, that means it's like the buzzard coming in.
Right.
So usually something bad's going to happen.
Picking at the carcass.
I tell you what, if you ever come in there, you better be aware of Fred having a bucket of water. You know what I'm saying?
Fred better be there to have the bucket of water, all right?
Inside joke, guys. You don't know about that.
Well, Vinny, we're going to miss you. Thanks for all your contributions to the Bulls Talk podcast. You can find all of our shows at NBCSportsChicago.com/podcast. You can also listen and subscribe at Apple, Google Play, and Stitcher. Vinny, best of luck in New York.
Love you guys.
Until we meet again, we got to cash in those lunch bets and everything else that's going on. Yeah. So.
Absolutely. I got a bet with Cap. Cap says the Bulls are going to make the playoffs, like when they signed Jabari. And then today he's like, no shot.
he changed
his mind that quick.
Well, Vinny's going to come back to Chicago, do some fine eating. We look forward to that. Yeah. So, season's right around the corner. Look forward to opening night coming up next Thursday.